Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'll be reading for you today in digest form the December 2007 issue of World Radio Magazine. World Radio is published by Armand Noble. His call is N6WR. The editor, Nancy Kott, K-O-T-T. Her call, WZ8C. World Radio Magazine is located at 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. You can be reached by telephone by area 916-457-3655. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Our website is www.handyham.org. And we're spelling Handy Ham, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, one word, Handy Ham. Today I'll go directly to the editor's log by Nancy Kott, WZ8C. There's still time to drop a holiday hint to your friends and family that you would appreciate a subscription, renewal, or, assuming you have been really good this year, a lifetime subscription to your favorite magazine. If you have a young ham in your family, a lifetime subscription is a particularly good gift selection. Winter time is prime operating time. The autumn chores have been completed and your antenna work is completed. The lawnmower and the rakes have been put away. Now you can cozy up in your shack and ham to your heart's content. Straight key night, that's my favorite holiday, is right around the corner. Maybe preach yourself to one of the terrific new straight keys on the market. Check out the Cherry Red Vibroplex No, that's K-N-O-W, code key. And give one a whirl on Straight Key Night, December 31st through January 1st of next year. I've met some very special people on Straight Key Night. One in particular is Don Munger, called KC4UUG, who is now a silent key. He has passed on. I feel fortunate to have run into him my first Straight Key Night. We chatted for hours. He was a retired military astronomer. Don took the time to slow down with the code and chat at what must have been a painfully slow pace for him. His kindness made a lasting impression on me. We kept up a Straight Key Night anniversary scheduled chat or schedule for many years. If you're looking for a new goal to work toward next year, consider the World Radio Awards and Achievement Certificates. Did you know we have three of them? One is for contacting permanent stations in 100 different nations. This is different from the DXCC award in that a portable de-expedition contacts don't count. This award is challenging, but it is something that a modest station can achieve. The contact at all time zones, at CATZ, is a fun goal to shoot for. You have to work someone in each of the 24 time zones. Do you enjoy PSK? Set your sights for our 31 on 31 award. Work 31 sovereign nations on PSK 31. Next month in the January issue, we will have details about all these awards and certificates, including the requirements on how to apply for them. But you can get a head start by getting to our webpage at www.wr6wr.com/new-site/departments/awards.html. And click on departments and then on awards. Happy holidays from the entire staff of World Radio, and we send you our wishes for a healthy, happy, and peaceful new year. See you on Straight Key Night, 73-88-33, Nancy Kott. WZ8C. If your listeners would like to get in touch with Nancy directly, you can email her too. Her name, Nancy, at TIR.com. or via editor@wr6wr.com. Let's take a peek now at some of the information coming through, the latest news. California fires. 6 major wildfires burned across Southern California in late October. If you watched the TV news, you saw the destruction firsthand. Hardest hit was the San Diego area, where half a million people were evacuated as the Witch Fire, the Harris Fire, and the Pucamaima fires combined scorched close to 300,000 acres. The devastation from these fires is staggering, and amateur radio operators were reported to be right in the middle of the relief efforts. According to Pat Bunsold, WA6MHZ, in El Cajon, ARIS and RACIS were quite active and very busy. ARIS was assisting the county with amateur radio operations, staffing the Emergency Medical Service, EOC, as well as most hospitals. Several medical facilities, including Poway Pomerando Hospital, were completely evacuated, requiring moving all the patients to safer ground. Bunsell says that amateur radio operators were using the high-level repeaters on Mount Palomar and Lions Peak for traffic. He noted that considerable traffic had passed using data modes such as WindLink. This provided the Emergency Medical Service with a format that interfaced directly with the Webco software they were using. Bunsell also said that County EMS, Emergency Medical Services, was delighted with the Amateur Radio Emergency Service being able to seamlessly insert itself into the Webco software they were using in the disaster. Meanwhile, in San Bernardino County, it was the Grass Valley, Santiago, and Slide fires. While smaller in size than some of the others, it was just as disastrous. That information came from AR Newsline. Now, amateur radio operators in northern Indiana were kept busy as a tornado swept through Napanee, Indiana, and surrounding communities on 18 October. Thanks to the late evening efforts of sky-worn amateur radio operators, many Elkhart County residents escaped serious injuries and death as 160-mile-an-hour winds raced across the Hoosier landscape under the cover of darkness. According to the National Weather Service and amateur radio ground, the powerful half-mile-wide tornado cut a path across 20 miles of northern Indiana. Emergency management officials said the storm destroyed nearly 200 homes and 53 businesses. Normal communication links were severely damaged. In the days following the storm, amateur radio operators continued to help with communication around the area. Also filed by AR Newsline. Here's just one more interesting piece in the Newsfront area. New Mexico amateur radio hams donate severe weather early warning system equipment. The Socorro Amateur Radio Association built and donated to the City of Socorro 911 call center an early warning system that will alert the police when dangerous weather approaches New Mexico's Rio Grande Valley. According to association member John Spargo, call KC5NTW, Socorro sits in a void in the National Weather Service radio-based alert system. In New Mexico, there are two signals that can be broadcast toward Socorro. However, neither signal is reliably received. Remembering a hailstorm that occurred on the 5th of October in 2004, the local amateur radio community was determined to make certain that another storm would not sneak up on them. So, the Socorro Amateur Radio Association built and installed a system at the Socorro Police Station to permit city officials to hear the National Weather Service alerts and tell them if severe weather is headed their way. Spargo said the general public still would not be able to pick up the Weather Service's warning signal because it's a direct link to city officials. He also noted that association members Glenn Mauger, WB50AF, and Vern Levitt, KD5UHP, put in many hours designing and installing the antenna and receiver. Ownership of the new receiving system was officially transferred to the City of Socorro on the 25th of July, 2007. And that was submitted by K5CEC through Newsline. We'll go now to another section, the 22nd Southwest Ohio Digital and Technical Symposium. The 22nd Annual Southwest Ohio Digital and Technical Symposium is being planned for Saturday, the 12th of January, 2008. Admission is free. This event is sponsored by the Dial Radio Club and will be held in Teskin Hall of the Middletown campus of Miami University. Directions may be found on their website, www.swohdigi.org. The doors will open at 7:30, and the presentations will be from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. There will be no flea market. This is a technical conference slant seminar only. Talk-in on 2 meters is 146.61. The intent of this continuing series of symposia is to provide a forum for exchanging ideas and learnings about technical aspects of the hobby. Forum organizers strive to have presentations providing a good mix of the future with practical application of the present. This year's format will be slightly different in that more emphasis will be placed on hands-on interactions between presenters and attendees. There will be a limited number of formal presentations, and the remainder will use a science fair slant show-and-tell structure. Since this is an officially sanctioned ARRL, American Radio Relay League Conference, one of the formal presentations will be an ARRL forum. If you are interested in providing a presentation and or paper or want more information, please contact the name J-J-A-Y, Slough, S-L-O-U-G-H, call K-4-Z-L-E, Kilo 4, Zulu, Lima, Echo, at that call sign, K-4-Z-L-E, at embarkmail.com. I'll spell that E-M-B-A-R-Q-M-A-I-L.com. Or 2554 Hamilton Road, Lebanon, Ohio, 45036. Or you can call them at area 513-934-0235. Well, I think we'll go now to DX World to see what's happening in the rest of this great world of ours. Time flies, and so do the DX expeditions. The author here is Kelly Jones, call N0VD. It seems the older I get, the faster the days and months go by. I remember as a kid thinking summer lasted forever. Those days are a distant past. In fact, it seems like it was just a few days ago I was writing about starting your summer antenna projects. Here we are now, fast approaching the holiday season. However, we've been treated to some great expeditions over the last couple of months. VK9WWI, B29NI and its various incarnations, and 3C7Y, just to name a few. Those are all call signs of other countries, folks, and radio stations therein. The low bands have come to life, and the contest season is well on its way. I certainly hope you were able to get that new antenna on the tower, the new dipole strung, or the new vertical planted in the backyard while it was still warm. Now, speaking of Willis Island, VK9WWI, this mini-expedition came to a close on October 3rd and netted nearly 11,000 QSOs, that's two-way radio contacts from others in the world, after just 10 days on the island. I say mini-expedition, as the two-man team consisting of George Walner, Alpha Alpha 7 Juliet Victor, and Thomas Pacaris, Hotel Alpha 7 Radio Yankee, described the trip as a simple personal de-expedition that was combined with diving and spearfishing. Equipment was chosen as the minimum required for meaningful low-band operation. The budget was also moderate, relatively speaking. Oh, incidentally, folks, for you listeners, Willis Island is located northeast of Australia in the Pacific Coral Sea. Even at the bottom of the sunspot cycle, being DX has a way of bringing the bands to life. When we arrived on Willis, our first impression was that the bands were dead, North American and European stations could not imagine how dead the bands are, so far from civilization. One could have easily thought that there was no propagation. Once we had sent a few CQs, however, first a few stations would appear, and then, when we were spotted on one of the DX clusters, all hell would break loose, and suddenly a previously dead band would be boiling with calls from many areas of the world. The Victor Kilo Nye Whiskey Whiskey India operators offer a couple of tips for calling DX on the low bands. But keep in mind, these tips can be applied to the higher bands when conditions are poor. They go on to say, when calling a DX station on 160 meters, unless you are very confident of your full-size array and kilowatts, you should send your call sign 2 or 3 times. Due to noise, weak signals, and QRM, it is common that the operator picks up only part of a call sign each time it is sent. A lot of the time was wasted by repeating asking stations to resend their call signs. Sending speed should be between 12 and 25 words per minute, neither faster nor slower. The problem with slow speed is, in this part of the Pacific anyway, that there are a number of beacons that can be heard across the 160-meter band, and these beacons transmit at about 5 words per minute. Speeds faster than 25 words per minute are difficult to copy due to lightning noise or the Chinese dragon triggering the noise blanker. The author goes on to talk about Ducey Island, that's D-U-C-I-E, Ducey Island. If you missed these great expeditions over the last few months, there are still some great ones on the horizon. Ducey Island, Victor Papa 6 Delta X-ray, is still scheduled to take place in February 2008. Unfortunately, it appears that team members Jan, DJ8NK, and Marty, OH2BH, had to withdraw, but have been replaced by 4 additional operators. It looks like they will give the new Elcraft K3 a workout on this trip. We decided early to take the radio with us that will be possibly the best radio for this kind of operation, and we are very thankful that Elcraft will supply us with 7 of their new K3 transceivers. One ACOM 2000A to be used on 160 meters, and 6 or 7 ACOM 1000 slant 1010 from ACOM will round out the transmitting side. The current plan is beyond Ducey, around 19 days, weather and logistics permitting. This will certainly be a great opportunity for you to pick up Ducey if you missed the last DX expedition. You know, folks, it seems that more and more I'm talking about Morse code, the old dits and dots that the soul folks are so used to from the many years of playing with amateur radio. And for that matter, just sort of in a romantic way, on some of the old radio teletypes of the railroads and so forth and so on. So here's an article on Morse code. It's titled The Sapolo, and that's spelled S-A-P-A-L-L-O, Sapolo. The authors are David Sapp, S-A-P, Beckler. His call is W-A-6-S-A-P, and Al Gallo, G-A-L-L-O, call W-0-E-R-E. Designing radios, experimenting with antenna configurations, and finding other ways to communicate has always been the fun part of amateur radio. This story is about the Sapolo key, named after its two inventors, David Beckler, W-A-0-S-A-P, and Al Gallo, W-0-E-R-E. Dave and Al are two amateurs who sometimes take things to extremes to accomplish a goal and have fun doing it. It all started on their first trip to the Dayton Hamvention 2007. This trip evolved by invitation from ICOM Corporation to speak at their booth about the success of our special event station, W0S, that's the call, the 95th anniversary of the Titanic disaster. Actually, there were 4 hams involved in the special event station, including Rick Voigt, KB9YZE, and Rod Kittleman, K0ADI. We call ourselves the Titanic 4, a spin-off of the Beatles, Fab 4. You can view our website at www.wzros.org. Our trip began from Nixa, Missouri, on Thursday afternoon before Dayton's opening on Friday. Minus Rich Voigt, some people just have to work. We packed up the SUV, and Fred Bell and Zira LU took Rich's spot to balance out the seating arrangements in the SUV. Al Gallo and SAP were in the back seat with Al's Yaesu FT-817 QRP rig. Al made up a 20-meter wire to be fished out the rear window of the SUV as we traveled down the interstate. The antenna wire was flapping wildly behind the vehicle as we were trying to maintain the speed limit, if not slightly above, to keep the antenna wire off the ground. Al began sending CQ with the code keys on the microphone with 2 watts of power. If you are not familiar with the FT-817 and its code keys, you have to use your thumbs to send the digits and dahs off the microphone with the 2 buttons. So it does not take long before you become all thumbs in sending, just from the sheer pain of pressing the buttons. Swapping the rig back and forth between the two of us, I thought surely we were doing all this in vain. There is no way anyone will ever hear a puny signal from the flapping antenna. After several minutes of transmitting, we tuned around only to hear a station, WU1ITU, calling CQ and creating a pileup. So Al gives him a call, feverishly pressing the buttons on the mic, his thumbs already indented from numerous attempts trying to make contacts before. All of a sudden, "Wait, he's calling us! He's calling us!" Al says. And sure enough, W0ERE was in CUSO with WU1ITU with a 599 signal. The SUV erupted with joy. No one could believe this was actually working except for Al. He has the faith, or a hard head. You make the call. It was not too long after SAP and Fred made separate contacts with WU1ITU, and we were back on the air trying to contact more stations. Within time, we had made 2 more contacts before our thumbs were toast. After giving our speeches at the ICOM booth, Al and I decided that we needed a key for the FT-817 so we could send faster and save our poor worn-out thumbs for the trip back. So off to the boneyard we went, or the junkyard, on a mission to find parts to build a key. Sure, we could have bought the key, but that's not what hams do. We are innovators. Okay, touched. Plus, we had money to spend on other things. So we started out looking for something to make a key with, anything other than pressing those darn buttons again. Before long, Al hollered to me, "Hey, Sap, come over here, look at this." Al found some old telephone PBX switching relays for 25 cents each. "Do you think we can make a key out of this using the relay contacts?" I thought, sure, why not? So after plunking down a quarter, off we go to find solder for 50 cents and a brand new cheapy 30-watt soldering iron for $1. A little borrowed wire and an old HD body given to us, and $1.75 later, we were set to complete our mission later that night. It did not take long after tinning the new soldering iron. Al and Sap wired up the relay contacts, plugged it into the 817, and with the Leatherman transformer tool set, we adjusted the relay contacts for the perfect separation for transmitting. Before long, we had that thing sending CW at 20 words per minute with ease. The touch and feeling was unbelievable. "Watch out, Vibraplex. There's a new key in town." We mounted the relay on the old HT body from the boneyard. The 2 knobs have no effect on the king, but it sure adds to the mystery of this strange key. On the way back home, the contacts were much better since speed and accuracy enhanced our contacts. However, we needed a name for this new key, and Rod deciding we should name it the Sapollo, after Sap and Gallo's last name, and the rest is history. Thinking that this is the end of the story is not true. Al's next idea was to see if the Sapala could send underwater. So Al placed the key in the kitchen sink full of water, and sure enough, perfect CW underwater. With all the freshwater lakes in the Ozarks of Missouri, our next venture is to make a flotilla for an antenna while we make a CW contact underwater. Anyone have an inner tube vertical or a snorkel? See, some things are a lot lighter in the magazine reading, folks, than some of this really more technical material. Here's a very short synopsis of amateur satellites. It begins with the title F.O., Fox Oscar. F.O-29 is semi-operational. The contributing author here is Terry Dodds, D-O-U-D-S. Terry's call, N-8-K-I. Hi, everyone. I hope your fall has been a fruitful one and that you're all ready for winter. I've been a bit under the weather for the past few months, having been diagnosed with prostate cancer in early August. However, I had surgery 2 days ago, and it looks like all systems are go at this point, which is good news. Even so, the news must go on, so here's the latest info on this amateur satellite service. FO-29 is beginning to have some power problems after 12 years in orbit. The internal impedance of the battery is now rising and cannot sustain more than a 25-minute ellipse time without causing problems. The control station at JARL, that's Japanese Amateur Radio League, has been working on failure analysis and battery reconditioning. The team has been successful in partially recovering the satellite and reported recently FO-29 is semi-operational. MASA, called JN1GKZ in Tokyo, provided additional details. The FO-29 battery is almost dead and the automatic recovering function does not work. This means the transmitter will stop after eclipse and a wake-up command by the JARL command station is needed to start the satellite. The FO-29 users are requested to please keep their downlink signal weaker than the beacon. JARL posts daily FO-29 operating schedules via the AMSAT-BB mailing list. Telemetry reception reports are welcome. Please send the reports to lab@jarl.or.jp. Now, the author continues about the amateur radio space station and World Scout Jamboree. On Saturday, 04 August, an amateur radio on the International Space Station contact took place between scouts attending the 21st World Scout Jamboree in Chelmsford, England, and Clay Anderson, KD5PLA, aboard the ISS. 10 scouts were able to ask 2 questions each of the astronaut using the special event station GB100J, that's the Great Britain station. Approximately 40,000 scouts from 200 countries attended the Jamboree. Audio was broadcast on the Jamboree FM radio station and was webcast on the radio station's website. The audio was also fed into the Echolink JK1ZRW server and received 50 connections from stations in 12 countries, including 6 repeaters nodes. On Sunday, the 26th of August, China's Nanjing No. 3 High School in Nanjing, Jiangsu, participated in an ARIS contact, the first ever done in China. It received extensive media coverage. Video of the contact may be found at their website. On Tuesday, 11 September, the Kenwood radio aboard the ISS was turned on and configured once again to run packet operations. The amateur radio community worldwide has been very pleased to have this capability restored. AO7. Alpha Oscar 7 is one of the early satellites amateurs had to work with. Since its miraculous emergence from a battery problem, it has been an available other satellite to use. It has transponders on it, so single sideband is the normal mode of operation with several QSOs allowed at a time. Numerous reports of its switching between mode A and B have been verified. It has a much larger footprint than 8051 and is in view much longer. The Delphi C3 team has been informed by its launch broker that the launch of Delphi C3 has been moved to December 2007. The two major factors that have contributed to the postponement of the launch are weather and the Indian launch schedule. That's the nation of India. The weather effect on the launch is the typhoon season in India, which lasts from mid-October until December. The launch schedule is dependent on mission priorities. In the meantime, the Delphi C3 team will continue to work on further testing parts of the satellite and preparing for the operations phase. As soon as more information regarding the launch of Delphi C3 is available, it will be available on the Delphi C3 website. It will have a telemetry downlink in the amateur satellite segment of the VHF amateur radio frequency band. Telemetry decoding software will be made available to participating amateur radio operators and universities, which allows them to decode and display real-time telemetry. Their software will allow for uploading received telemetry data to the central Delphi C3 ground station via the Internet for data processing. The Delphi C3 team would like to invite all interested radio amateurs to receive, decode, and forward telemetry data to the Delphi C3 ground station. Delphi C3 includes a mode UV linear transponder. The satellite will be in telemetry-only mode for approximately the first 3 months of the mission, after which it is switched to transponder mode. Oh, I think it's time for a change of pace, folks. What do you think, huh? Special events. Pearl Harbor Remembrance. Historical Electronics Museum Amateur Radio Club, call sign W3HEM, will operate special event station W2W, that's Whiskey 2 Whiskey, 1000 Eastern Standard Time on 01 December through 1500 Eastern Standard Time 09 December 2007 in Baltimore, Maryland, in remembrance of Pearl Harbor. Principal operating frequencies on single sideband 7.241 MHz and 14.241 MHz plus or minus conditions. CW will be on 7.071 MHz and 14.071 MHz plus or minus conditions. The Baton Rouge Amateur Radio Club in Louisiana and the USS Kidd Amateur Radio Club will hold a special event 07 December 2007 in commemoration of Pearl Harbor. Operating frequencies will be inside the general class bands. Band activity will most likely be 20 meters, around 14.250 to 14.320. Other bands are possible, so listen around. CW activity, that's Morse code activity, will be near the QRP, calling frequencies 7040, 10106, 14060, 21060, and 28060. For a QSL card confirming your contact with them, send a self-addressed stamped envelope size 10 or larger to the USS Kidd Amateur Radio Club, call W5KID, care of USS Kidd Museum, 305 South River Road, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, zip code 70802. Now, with the Christmas season in mind, Twin Christmas Cities greetings. Christmas City and Delaware Lehigh Amateur Radio Clubs will operate special event station WX3MAS, 1400 Zulu through 0200 Zulu, 08 through 09 December 2007 for their annual Christmas greetings. Their operating frequencies somewhere around 28.465, 21.365, 14.265, 7.270, and 3.970. If you want a certificate, send a QSL. Information to CCARC/DLARC, WX3MAS, Greystone Building, Gracedale Complex, RR8, Nazareth, Pennsylvania, 18064. Now there's a 75th birthday anniversary party. The Valley River Club of Oregon will operate special event station W7PXL. We have a silent key announcement here. William D. Snyder, call W0LHS, has passed away. William D. Snyder, 90, a pioneering filmmaker and prolific amateur radio author, died Friday, September 14, 2007, in Fargo, North Dakota. He died of pneumonia contracted after an operation for an aortic aneurysm. Bill was best known as one of Fargo, North Dakota's earliest professional film directors. He was responsible for more than 800 documentaries, commercial spots, and educational and technical films. In the world of amateur radio, Bill would be remembered as the world radio columnist writing the Digital Bus column and for his participation in the Gatti Alicrafters expedition from 1947 through 1948 to the mountains of the moon in East Africa. He was active for many years on RTTY teletype, CW packet, and on the amateur radio satellites. He held DXCC, RTTY, Slant Digital, with 243 countries confirmed. Bill first learned the art of filmmaking after graduating from Fargo Central High School in 1935 when he moved to Hollywood to work for the Technicolor Motion Picture Corporation. He returned to Fargo 2 years later to attend North Dakota State University and served 4 years in the U.S. Army Signal Corps. You know, folks, I just got to thinking, I'm flipping the pages here in between pauses to put recorded material together for this Coverage Handy Ham System Digest format presentation of the December 2007 World Radio Magazine. And I come upon an interesting little announcement on page 48, so listen up. This, of course, requires you to be an amateur radio operator. If you are, and you have any of those QSL cards still hanging around in a drawer, even though you may not have used them very often, guess what? You can maybe win a super-duper amplifier. Here are the details. It states, World Radio Super Drawing Prize, Ameritron AL-811H, $899. An 800-watt PEP amplifier. 4, 811-A's. Number 1, no purchase necessary. One entry per household. That makes it easy. 2, send your QSL card. And it states, as a card, not in an envelope, to the following address. Amplifier. AMPLIFIER, World Radio, 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. Number 3, one QSL card will be pulled out of the box by an eyes closed picker. Number 4, World Radio staffers, columnists, advertisers are not eligible. Number 5, winning QSL card will be drawn and winner will be called on Christmas Day. That's something great in some lucky ham's stocking. You should probably scribble your phone number on there somewhere, even though it doesn't say so here. And number 6, what are the odds? 26,000 plus hams will see this month's issue, that's the December 2007 issue of World Radio. From experience in past drawings, only about 1% will enter. So it looks like the odds really aren't all that bad if you're lucky and you have a QSL card and are an amateur radio operator. Send it to Amplifier World Radio, 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. and get ready for Christmas Day and a phone call from World Radio Magazine. You may be the lucky winner. Well, after that bright announcement, let's take a trip to Mars. No. I don't mean the planet Mars. I mean Mars. We have an article titled E Pluribus Unum, bringing it to MCOM. The author is Bill Sexton, N1IN, slant, AAA9PC. It starts off with a quotation. If we can put this job over, it will be the biggest thing ARRL has ever done. Certainly it is the biggest opportunity that has ever been offered us. Let us make the most of it. Close quotation. That's the editor-in-chief of QSD Magazine writing in the October 1925 issue. You heard me right. October 1925 issue. If he sounds a bit excited, well, the news that month was indeed dramatic. The U.S. Army Signal Corps had just recognized the League, American Radio Relay League, as official representative of America's hams. Further, the Corps proposed that the ARRL join it in an unprecedented partnership organizing amateurs to serve the nation, quoting, in time of an emergency such as the landlines, both telephone and telegraph, are seriously damaged or destroyed. That's 1925, remember. It took months of deliberation, but the League finally embraced the invitation brought to its Connecticut headquarters by Captain Tom C. Reeves, himself an amateur operator. Indeed, embraced it with a passion. As editor Kenneth Warner, now a silent key, declared in a subsequent issue of QSD, quoting, "It seems to us that this affiliation is about the most important thing that ever happened to amateur radio in this country." Close quote. There it was, much more to this partnership than just the founding of the Army Amateur Radio System, as Mars would be known then. More even than the great boost in prestige given the young ARRL over its well-heeled rival, the commercially sponsored, and now long gone, Wireless Association of America. What was most significant? This 1925 agreement formalized amateur radio's unique role in U.S. national security. Ever since, it has justified the federal guarantee of operating privileges and spectrum allocations. Kenneth Warner's most important thing ever was no exaggeration. And that brings us to August 2007, Hurricane Katrina's second anniversary, and amateur radio's continuing involvement in national security. With an elegant symmetry no one could have foreseen, the top brass of the Army Military Affiliate Radio Systems, that's where the Mars comes from, followed in Captain Reeves' footsteps of 80-odd years before and paid another historic call on the ARRL this summer. The occasion was the League's National Convention and concurrent Global Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Conference in Huntsville, Alabama, 16 through 19 August. Army Mars Chief Stu Carter and key staff members were there in force, specifically intent on rejuvenating the largely dormant 1925 ARRL collaboration. It was the latest step in Carter's aggressive re-energizing of Mars itself since he assumed command last December 6th. Carter, a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, made no secret of his purpose at Huntsville. At one of the first panels for emergency response organizations, he read out an imaginary news release he hoped would soon become more or less fact. It said, end quoting, "The Army and the ARRL have joined hands in a cooperative program that will soon make use of the service of amateur radio for every unit in the Army National Guard and Army Reserve throughout the country." Close quote. That certainly got the attention of ARRL CEO David Sumner, who was in the audience along with his COO Harold Kramer. A couple of days later, Sumner pursued Carter with detailed questions when key officers of both organizations met privately to discuss the renewed collaboration. In the end, Carter reported to his members, "We all agreed that forming a partnership between Mars and the ARRL would benefit the entire MCOM community and ultimately America." For months, Carter and his chief deputy, Operations Director Grant Hayes, and their volunteer staff officers had been chewing over two glaring anomalies in the organization's preparedness for the next Katrina, or 9/11. One was the slow pace of integrating response procedures for the three Mars services, Army, Air Force, and Navy Marine Corps, so that a single call for support would command the resources of all three. The three Mars chiefs ironed out that issue during the Dayton Hamvention last May, and results were already showing. But there still remained the murk and misunderstanding that had long surrounded what should be a natural collaboration between Mars and the ARRL-sponsored American Radio Emergency Service. As a first result of the Huntsville Summit, Hayes went to work with the League's new Emergency Preparedness and Response Manager, Dennis Dura, to expedite a memorandum of understanding that defines each side's emergency response role. Mars headquarters at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, immediately gave the ARRL a military call sign to go with the historic FCC call of W1AW, so well known to amateurs globally. For interoperation on military frequencies, Mars licensees transmitting from the Newington, Connecticut station will sign AAN1ARL, that's Alpha Alpha November 1, Alpha Romeo Lima, AAN1ARL, once the MOU is activated. Simultaneously, Army Mars members at large were tasked to make contact with their local counterparts in ARIS and to represent Mars in activities such as the annual October simulated emergency test. A likely next step is designation of permanent Mars liaison operators to join each ARRL section's emergency nets. The lead falls to Carter because Army Mars is the service designated by the Defense Department to provide civil relief backup communications in the continental United States. The Dayton agreements with his fellow chiefs, Bo Lindquist of Navy Marine Corps Mars and the new Air Force Chief Al Ehrman, assured tri-service integration when emergency strikes. The Mars view of parallel collaboration with ARES is quite uncomplicated. ARES is without peer in its resources for close-in communications in and around a disaster, whether natural or man-made. Mars, by its explicit Defense Department charter, is ready to provide long-haul connections for military and government entities when normal channels fail. You can see the natural fit. To put it in tactical shorthand, ARIS, VHF nets, and repeaters funnel on-scene information to incident commanders and emergency operations centers. Mars, deploying its newly operational WindLink messaging system and other HF resources, is poised to handle onward communications with higher military and federal headquarters during the critical hours, days, before federal response is mobilized and on-scene. This long-haul, short-haul picture is something of an oversimplification since the ARRL also has HF connectivity through its long-standing national traffic system, an institution which, interestingly, was originally patterned on the 1920s Army network. An Army Mars, with its constantly expanding TELPAC nodes for the WindLink messaging service, might be able to provide local email connectivity in appropriate situations. The challenge is to sort out who concentrates on what to minimize duplication and any suggestion of competition to set up patterns for coordinating the command and control function and then make the resultant overall communications facility transparent to agencies needing its services. In a word, one-stop shopping when help is needed, with fast, uncomplicated response, and with minimal overlapping delay or confusion. That's not going to be easy. Both parties in this collaboration are, for operational purposes, highly decentralized. ARIS, for instance, is autonomous even down to the county level in some areas. Mars is structured on military lines with a firm chain of command, but in emergency situations, headquarters expects state and regional directors to exercise full initiative based on local circumstances, and individual members to do the same. Also, there's a third player, the quasi-government radio amateur civil emergency service, RACES, which coexists in various shapes and forms with ARIS depending on local circumstances. So, while the overall memorandum of understanding is important, urgently so, still, achieving the good intentions ratified at Huntsville will probably depend less on the leadership's paperwork than on the rank-and-file members' spadework. There, out in the field, is where the collaboration will have to happen in response to the next great catastrophe. Chief Carter knows this and has encouraged his region and state directors to make haste in preparing their members for autonomous first response. Accept guidance and policy from this headquarters, he said in his weekly broadcast to members, but prepare to lead without my lead. You are the first line of leadership in your state and region, and you set the stage for quick, robust, and reliable NCOM support. Indeville is certainly where it happened in September 1928. The Army amateur radio system was still getting organized when that year's disastrous Caribbean hurricane struck, claiming 1,836 lives in South Florida, another 312 in Puerto Rico. Even so, the ham response established a great tradition as well as winning lots of headlines. Quoting, most of the amateur stations of Florida were on the job with spare batteries laid by and everything set for a long vigil, USD reported in its December 1928 issue. Of these stations, 4 Alpha Foxtrot Charlie, 4 AFC at Palm Beach, was the star performer. From Monday to Thursday of that eventful week, that station was continuously on the air. The War Department net control station WAV at Washington, D.C. was on the air looking for Florida stations, and with the assistance of other amateurs was hooked up to 4 Alpha Foxtrot Charlie. By this means, the first reports to the American Red Cross were made, starting the relief machinery of that organization, and by the same channel, the word was conveyed that brought Army blankets, cots, and supplies for the stricken area from Atlanta. When the two operators, City Fireman Ralph Hollis for AFC and Chief Engineer Forrest Dana for AGR, who lost his home and everything in it, finally signed off the air, the War Department publicly honored their service. Quoting, Messrs. Hollis and Dana realized the urgent need for outstanding communication and established it, clinging to their self-imposed task with a purposeful tenacity worthy of highest praise. For 3 days, these two men stayed at their instruments, disregarding personal safety and interests until the regular channels of electrical communication with the outside world were restored. Close quote. General Gibbs, the chief signal officer, personally wired them, "You are to be commended for your untiring effort and loyal devotion to duty. We shall always remember this worthy duty well performed." And so should we. The author submitting this article is Bill Sexton, S-E-X-T-O-N. His call is N1IN, slant AAA9PC. Bill can be reached by sending snail mail, that's U.S. Postal Service, to 105 West Road, Richmond, Massachusetts, 01254, or by email to sextonw@juno.com. I'm going to finish up with 1010 International, the 2007 1010 scholarship recipients. The author here is Jerry Gross, WA6POZ. This will be as time allows, folks. We only have about 5 minutes. Each year, 1010 awards scholarships to deserving amateurs. The awards are made through the Foundation for Amateur Radio Incorporated. This year, 34 students applied for the 1010 Awards. 6 were selected, and each was awarded $1,000. The recipients are Benjamin R. Frye, F-R-Y-E, call K-I-4-B-A-W, Roanoke, Virginia. Diane Hallam, H-A-L-L-A-M, call KC9III. Menominee, Michigan. Joshua Hora, H-O-R-A, call Alpha Delta 5AC, AD5AC, Allen, Texas. Catherine McDaniel, WB4CAT, Mooresville, North Carolina. Andrew W. McLucky, K3AWM, Morton, Pennsylvania. And Seth D. Price, N3MRA, Blacksburg, Virginia. Benjamin Fry is an 18-year-old sophomore studying computer science at James Madison University in Harrisburg, Virginia. He holds a technician license and is active on 10 meters and VHF-UHF bands. He was an organizer and officer of his high school radio club. He was recommended by Richard A. Turner, KZ4VT, 1010, member number 67296. Diane Hallam is an adult student attending the University of Wisconsin, Marionette, Wisconsin, seeking a bachelor's degree in zoology. She holds a general class license, is most active on 6 and 2 meters, and is involved with her local ARIS racist group and the Boys and Girls Club Radio Club. She was recommended by Edward L. Engelman, KG8CX, 1010, number 59871. Joshua Hora is a 21-year-old junior studying business administration and finance at the University of Texas in Dallas, hoping to go into investment banking. He has an extra class license already, good for you, and was first licensed in 1997. He is active on PSK 31, 10, 15, and 20 meters, as well as local VHF, UHF, and participates in Skywarn. He is a 1010 member, number 69894. Catherine McDaniel is an adult student who will start a master's program in nursing. She has a BA from North Carolina State and a bachelor's of nursing from Winston-Salem State University. She holds a general class license and is an officer in Iredale County, ARIS, and a founding member of the Dixie Radio Pirates Club. Timothy B. Slay, N4IB, 1010 member number 70585, recommended her for this award. Andrew McLucky is an adult student attending Delaware County Community College in Media, Pennsylvania, seeking an associate's degree in nursing to begin a second career. He has an extra class license and is active on high frequency and VHF, including 20 meters CW. He enjoys DXing and teaches radio each summer at the Scout Reservation. He is a member of 1010 as well, number 73076. Seth Price, N3MRA, is an adult student working towards a master's degree in materials engineering at New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology. First licensed in 1992, he holds an extra class license. Seth is a member of FIST's 1010 International Net, number 73008, and is a charter member and webmaster for the New River Wireless Association. He is active with Skywarn and enjoys mobile HF operation. Funds for the scholarships come directly from members. Contributions can be made to 1010 International Net Scholarship Foundation Incorporated and are fully tax deductible. For 2008, the 1010 board voted to fund 4 scholarships each in the amount of $1,500. And of course, we all send our hearty congratulations to those recipients of the 1010 scholarships for the year 2007. Folks, my name is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH, or geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Right on good old Buzzards Bay, you go by me on 195 Wave on the way to Cape Cod, okay? I've been reading from you a digest format of World Radio Magazine, December 2007. World Radio is published by Armand Noble. His call is N6WR. The editor is Nancy Cott, WZ8C. You can be in contact with World Radio Magazine headquarters at 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California. zip code 95818, or you can call him at 916-457-3655. This recording is a production of the Courage Andy Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It's for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members only. Any other use could violate copyright laws. You can reach Handy Hems at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Website is www.handyham.org. Thanks for listening. 73 and 1 BLF.